Australia leads the world in solar power, but can our grid handle it? Australia is by any measure a solar superpower. In the past month, renewables have supplied more than half of our electricity, and roughly half of that, about a quarter of all power in the national electricity market, came from solar. We generate more solar energy per person than any other country on Earth, and the amount is set to continue growing for decades. But this world-leading success has a catch. Left unchecked, this fire hose of daytime energy can create serious engineering headaches. Our electricity grid, a system of poles and wires designed a century ago for a handful of large centralized coal plants, all of a sudden has to cope with the reality of millions of small distributed solar generators all switching on and off at the exact same time of day. Bulk energy supply and the physics of the grid are both being fundamentally rewritten. All this solar in our grid is creating three challenges that will make or break the clean energy transition. Keeping the lights on when the sun goes down, making solar power pay for itself, and keeping the grid steady as the big spinning coal machines fade away. Australia's greatest strength, cheap, clean solar, also risks becoming its biggest vulnerability. The question now is, how do we keep adding solar without breaking the system? I'm Rosie Barnes, founder of Pablo Consulting. We advise on clean energy technologies, assisting startups with their development, and helping investors assess the landscape. Welcome to Engineering with Rosie. By 2050, 99% of Australia's electricity is expected to come from renewables, with solar likely to make up nearly two-thirds of that total. That's fantastic for emissions. But even though solar panels are cheap and getting cheaper, such massive solar dominance actually causes some tricky economics. On sunny days, there is often so much solar energy flooding the market that the wholesale price of electricity plummets below zero. The financial impact is stark. Over the past 12 months in Australia, the average price solar farms received for their energy was just $37.25 per megawatt hour, compared to a market average of $122.40. Last month, which was spring, it was even worse, with solar assets earning an average of negative $2.67 per megawatt hour, while the market average sat at $55.66. In South Australia, during the first quarter of 2025, for instance, spot prices were negative or zero in 32% of all dispatch intervals. Those negative prices aren't caused only by solar. Utility solar farms can simply switch off to avoid paying to generate. But coal power stations can't ramp down below their base load. So if they want to make money during the evening price spikes, they have to keep running through the day, bidding into the market at negative prices to stay online. It's primarily the coal plants, not the solar farms, that usually drive prices below zero. And they are struggling with the economics and mechanics of operating alongside so much solar. Over the next decade, most of Australia's coal power plants are expected to close. And where is the energy to replace them going to come from? Primarily solar power. However, here we encounter a bit of a paradox. The oversupply of solar during the day is making new utility solar projects unprofitable, creating a major barrier for the investment in new projects. The obvious fix is storage. Batteries soak up cheap solar during the day and release it after sunset when prices rise. They flatten the midday oversupply and provide fast backup at night. We're only seeing the start of this effect now in the Australian electricity market. Utility-scale batteries are now being built faster than any generation type in Australia. There's more capacity under construction today than the combined output of our gas peakers at their evening peak. And when you add in the surge of home batteries, because over a gigawatt of home batteries have been installed in Australia in the past 3 months since the Australian government announced their cheaper home batteries program, which takes about 30% off the price of home batteries. So most people probably don't see energy storage as being a critical problem for our solar power grid anymore like they would have only a couple of years ago. This video is sponsored by Sungrow, who showed me their projects at the All Energy Conference in Melbourne, real examples of this technology in action.
It's been huge. I think 9 out of 10 systems going in has a battery now. We expected there to be a bit of a spike and then things to slow down, but it hasn't stopped. It's just on the increase and we don't see it slowing down anytime soon. There is that much rooftop solar now that the electricity price during the daytime in most parts of Australia is going into negative. So once we get through the daytime, then we need to look at addressing that big spike just as the sun goes down and everyone gets home from work. So with all these batteries going in, that's going to reduce the demand on the grid. And hopefully one day we can get to the point where that nighttime peak is no more and the wholesale cost of electricity is down. So then we might get to a point where power prices do come down. So it's not something you can just fix overnight, but this is definitely a huge step to doing that.
At the start of this video, I mentioned that there are three main challenges facing a solar superpower. We've seen that batteries can take care of the first two, providing power after the sun sets and a mechanism to make solar projects profitable again. But then there's the third problem, grid stability, once our traditional thermal generators start shutting down en masse. Traditional power plants with large spinning synchronous generators provide two crucial free byproducts, inertia and system strength. These are not units of energy, but physical properties essential for grid stability. Inertia is like a flywheel that resists sudden changes in speed. When a fault hits, that momentum keeps the grid's frequency from collapsing while control systems respond. System strength is what keeps the voltage waveform clean and steady even when something trips offline. And just a sidebar for accuracy, in Australia's NEM, the term system strength also refers to the grid's ability to supply fault current so that protection systems can detect and isolate faults. That's important, but I'm going to save fault current for another video to keep things a bit more simpler in this one. A strong grid has a resilient voltage that isn't easily perturbed by faults or sudden changes in generation or load. A weak grid, by contrast, is susceptible to voltage instability or even collapse when faced with the same disturbances. Inverter-based resources like solar farms and wind turbines are connected to the grid through power electronics and don't inherently possess these physical properties. As synchronous generators retire, these stability services must be actively and intentionally replaced, otherwise the grid becomes fragile and prone to cascading blackouts. To understand the stakes, we can look to a real-world warning. On the 20th of April 2025, Spain and Portugal suffered a massive blackout that left about 10 million people without power. A fault tripped 355 megawatts of generation, causing an overvoltage that cascaded through the network. Generators, both renewable and thermal, tripped off to protect themselves, frequency collapsed, and automatic defences failed to recover the grid. The Iberian Peninsula is like much of Australia. It sits at the end of a long, weakly connected network. The lesson that I think that we should draw from this experience isn't about any one technology, it's about stability. When voltage control and inertia are marginal, even a small fault can spiral out of control. The final root cause analysis for the 2025 Iberian blackout still hasn't been finalized, and it does involve more factors than the few I've mentioned here. It certainly isn't accurate to say that too much solar power was the main problem, but in the bigger picture, it doesn't really matter exactly how much of the blame for that particular blackout should be fairly placed with solar power. We still need to learn something about what can happen when system strength is not taken care of. So, is Australia set to be next? Fortunately, Australia has one big advantage. Ironically, the reason that Australia is in such a strong position to solve these problems is because of a long-acknowledged weakness. Decades before wind or solar power made it into the Australian grid, engineers have battled to keep voltage stable at the far ends of our sprawling network. Towns like Broken Hill, hundreds of kilometres from the nearest power station, sat at the end of high-impedance lines where voltage easily sagged or spiked. Utilities strengthened areas like that with synchronous condensers, capacitor banks, and automatic voltage control equipment. Mechanical and electrical fixes that supplied reactive power, boosted fault current, and steadied the waveforms. That expertise, born of necessity, gave Australian grid operators a deep understanding of weak grid dynamics. Synchronous condensers have been an effective solution for decades, providing stability much like traditional thermal generators. And we continue to install them today. For example, in South Australia, with over 70% of its electricity coming from wind and solar, and a desire to be able to turn off their gas generators entirely when there's enough renewables in the grid. And those are working great, but it would be good not to rely entirely on syncons. They are a little bit expensive to build and maintain, though really nothing compared to the money that gets spent building and maintaining a reliable electricity grid. They're also a bit inefficient and low power. But the real issue is that they may not be able to be deployed fast enough to match the speed of renewable growth. The future grid needs fast rollout, flexibility and instant response, qualities that mechanical systems struggle to deliver. Enter the grid-forming inverter, a smarter, faster, and more scalable technology that turns our grid's vulnerability, having lots of inverter-based generation, into its greatest strength. Every solar, wind, or battery system connects to the grid through an inverter, electronics that convert DC to AC. Most are grid-following. They measure the grid's 50 Hz signal and inject current in sync with it, much like musicians following a conductor's beat. But if the conductor falters, the music collapses. Grid-forming inverters flip that relationship. They create the beat. Acting as a controlled voltage source, they set their own frequency and voltage reference, allowing other devices to follow. In effect, they become the digital conductors of the modern grid. Inside each grid-forming inverter is a control algorithm that mimics the physics of a generator. Instead of mechanical inertia, the inverter's software enforces virtual inertia, drip control, and voltage support. It can detect a disturbance and correct it within milliseconds, far faster than any spinning machine. I'm here at All Energy in Melbourne, and this whole event, everyone's been talking about this really exciting news. AEMO has announced plans for a world-first trial to operate part of the Australian grid with no synchronous generation at all, running entirely on batteries and advanced inverter-based resources. This will be the first time anywhere in the world that a large interconnected grid operates solely on inverter technology with no interconnections to other grids. It shows just how close Australia is to proving that grid-forming inverters can completely take over the stabilising role that coal and gas turbines used to provide. I spoke with some of the SunGrow team and their partners yesterday to find out about some of the battery and inverter projects that they're doing that are taking us closer to this reality.
For example, in terms of like a larger scale in the utility, we just get a great connection of the Colliding Solar Farm, which is the one of the largest solar farms in this market. And it's also DC couples to combine with the battery and the solar. So during the day, it's solar, we are supplying the local, like agriculture town called Colliding, and also charging the battery. And at night, the energy will be sent to Perth, which is the capital of the Western Australia. And we also is building the largest standalone battery in South Australia. So soon it's going to be, not even a community battery, it become a state-level battery.
The combination of a grid-forming inverter and a large-scale battery is revolutionary. The inverter provides the brains, the battery provides the muscle. Together, they stabilize the grid while shifting energy in real time. This partnership solves both sides of Australia's paradox. On the engineering side, it supplies system strength and frequency control, keeping the grid stable even when there are no traditional power stations online. Economically, it soaks up clean solar power during the day and sells it back to the grid when energy is scarce and prices are high. For a century, grid stability came from physical momentum, the weight of steel spinning in generators. The next century stability will come from code. Grid-forming batteries provide inertia, system strength, and fast voltage control without burning any fuel. Australia's energy market operator, AEMO, Roadmap anticipates that at least 25 to 30% of future generation will need to be grid-forming to maintain reliability once coal retires. That means thousands of megawatts of smart inverters acting not as passive followers, but as active grid leaders. Australia is already proving the concept. Weak grid regions that once depended on synchronous condensers are now running pilot batteries performing the same role digitally. The technology works. The challenge is scale and speed. Australia's record-setting solar success exposed a critical vulnerability in a grid built for a different era. Yet the same engineering culture that managed weak remote networks for decades is turning that vulnerability into a strength. The shift underway is profound. From heavy mechanical machines to intelligent electronics, from inertia measured in tons to stability defined in microseconds, our grid is being rewritten in software. And that software is what will make 100% renewable electricity possible. This video was made possible thanks to SunGrow, who invited me to their booth at All Energy in Melbourne last week. You can find more conversations that I had with SunGrow on my LinkedIn and short videos, and learn more at sungrowpower.com. As always, thanks to the Engineering with Rosie Patreon team and YouTube members, if there are any by now, and you can join the team at this link. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next video.